Hey everyone, welcome to Brain Health with Dr. Nissen. In this show, we explore the universe's great unknown, the human brain. In my reflections and interviews with guests, we'll go to the forefront of psychiatry, neuroscience, nutrition, and medicine to see how we can enhance our mental health, sharpen our cognition, and reach better performance. This is Brain Health, and I'm Dr. Nissen. Let's dive right in. In this episode, we'll be exploring the topic of heat in depression. Specifically, we'll be looking at the role of hyperthermia and saunas as a possible treatment for depression, as well as light therapy and mindfulness meditation, and the effect that can have on the treatment of depression. I think you'll find it to be a really interesting episode and hope you enjoy. So another factor of depression and also possible treatment area of depression is that relating to hyperthermia. It's been found that those with major depressive disorder actually have higher body temperature on average. And this has led to some of the questioning of whether putting somebody into a period of hyperthermia or high body temperature, if you extend them past this heightened amount of depression, whether it can help to sort of reenact the body's natural cooling mechanisms and sort of reset the thermometer of the body. And so there have been a couple studies that have looked into this. There was this one randomized double-blind randomized controlled trial of 30 adults with depression, and they were exposed to just one session of hyperthermia. And it was found that after about a week, there was really significant antidepressant effects, and this lasted for up to 6 weeks afterwards. There was another study then that was sort of created after, or actually, I don't know if it was before or after, but looking at the effect of sauna sessions on depressive symptoms. And this study took 28 people who were diagnosed with depression and had them on a four-week regimen of sauna use, and found that there were a decrease in some of the depression symptoms, including anxiety and body aches associated with using the sauna. And so this has maybe some of its effect through heat shock proteins, which are released by our bodies. And in addition, there's sort of this inflammatory response that I talked about with exercise that is a brief sort of small amount of inflammation that then induces the body's sort of anti-inflammatory response to that. So in a lot of ways, hyperthermia and sauna use actually sort of mirror the effects of exercise. And so you can get sort of a similar benefit of having a small amount of increased inflammation that then leads to our bodies sort of training our body's anti-inflammatory mechanism to take over and to sort of, in effect, reset the thermometer to bring the temperature down. Again, as everything that I say, this is not medical advice. This has not been studied to a degree where we can say with certainty that it's helpful, and in some ways, certainly hyperthermia and sauna use can be dangerous, so this should always be something that you discuss with your doctor before trying. Nevertheless, it is something that I find to be sort of interesting and exciting in the literature, and that hopefully we can continue to watch and see the effects, the positive effects this might have. So light exposure is another interesting feature and possible treatment for depression. So as I already mentioned before, the role of circadian rhythms is really important in our sort of in coordinating our sleep and wake cycle, our feeding behavior, and our cyclical release of different hormones. And so it was found with seasonal affective disorder, which is, you know, like the winter blues, as people call it, when people start to get some of the symptoms of depression during these times of the year with low light exposure, that it was found that in these people that they improved with the treatment to bright light. Typically, this is around 10,000 lux or higher, which is roughly about the amount of light exposure during dawn or dusk. This was found in another study looking just at cortisol levels. If you remember, I've spoken about cortisol before, which is released by the adrenal glands, which sit on top of the kidneys. Cortisol likely has a strong role in many people's major depressive disorder. And anyways, in this study, there were 20 healthy men and women who were placed in an environment for 10 days where there were no outside cues of the time of day. So there was no, you know, rising of the light and then setting and dark time. It was just the same throughout. And it was found that the people who had exposure to about 7 hours of bright light, which is 10,000 lux, that these people had reductions in their cortisol levels. And this could mean that they could have likely some reductions in their depression. As in comparison to that, those who had sort of like candlelight exposure did not have the same reductions in their cortisol levels. It is important, though, to remember that our bright light exposure, and particularly blue light exposure, which is just, you know, one piece of the wavelength or of the frequency of the color of light, that exposure to this needs to happen during the right times. It needs to be during daylight hours. But when we have exposure to this at night, which is so common now with so many screens that we live with, that this can directly inhibit our body's release of melatonin from the pineal gland. The pineal gland releases melatonin, which makes us feel sleepy. And it's a very common treatment, actually, for insomnia, that people take melatonin that is just like our body's natural substance that's produced. So bright light, if exposed to too late, can result in inhibition of our body's release of melatonin. In addition, it's been found that melanopsin, which acts on our what's called suprachiasmatic nucleus in the brain, which sort of helps to control sort of how alert we feel. The melanopsin actually activates the more sort of alert daytime energetic sensation in our suprachiasmatic nucleus. So for these reasons, it's important to not be exposed to bright light and to blue frequency light in the evening hours before we go to bed, because indeed for depression, poor sleep is a major factor. About 80% of patients with major depressive disorder report poor sleep quality, and poor sleep quality has been found to be a major risk factor for suicide. So it is very important to get good quality sleep while we are dealing with major depressive disorder. So while we have been thinking about light exposure and depression, it has been mostly in the context of seasonal affective disorder, like I just talked about, until there was a randomized controlled trial that was done. There was 122 adults that were that all had depression, and they were given a light exposure therapy. And this is, like I said, a randomized controlled trial. So there was a group that was given light exposure therapy. There was a group that was given light exposure therapy plus antidepressants. And then there was a group that was given a placebo. And it was found in this that there was a significant reduction in depression in both the patients who got the light exposure therapy and the antidepressant together, and also to those who just only had light exposure therapy. The best reduction was in the combination of an antidepressant with the light exposure therapy. But nonetheless, it showed that even in patients who likely don't have seasonal affective disorder, for those who have major depressive disorder, light exposure therapy may be a good monotherapy or something to try on its own as a treatment for depression. So that's a very interesting factor that sort of ties everything together here of the importance of light exposure in depression, in seasonal affective disorder, and the considerations to have with this in the context of insomnia during depression. Another possible approach for the treatment of major depressive disorder is that of mindfulness meditation. So mindfulness meditation is a practice that's been going on for a long time, and now it's been studied more and more and been shown to have some effects with major depressive disorder. Namely, in thinking about the therapeutic intervention of major depressive disorder from a cognitive behavioral therapy perspective, kind of behavioral therapy approaches thought change and feeling change through the triangle of thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. Namely that if we can change our thoughts, that will have impacts on how we feel and how we behave. If we change how we behave, that will have impacts on how we feel and what we think. And if we can change how we feel, that will change how we behave and how we think. And so all three of those aspects are sort of interrelated in cognitive behavioral therapy. And the way that I like to think about mindfulness meditation is a way to build yourself some space between thoughts and their feelings, or thoughts and your behaviors. Similarly, to build space between your feelings and your behaviors, or your feelings and your thoughts. So I'll explain myself, because it seems perhaps a little nebulous of an idea. So if we consider, you know, even a thought of, like, if you're sitting on a pebble and you probably think, like, oh, that's uncomfortable, I'm gonna, so first thought is, I'm uncomfortable. Second thought is, like, either maybe that's annoying or like a bit of frustration, and then your behavior is that you move. And in depression, we can fall into very quick progressions from thought to feeling to behavior, to where we'll be reminded of a major failure that we had, or of that having a thought about how we were fired from our job, for instance. And then we can have these very sort of greased pathways where it goes from the thought of how you lost your job to I'm worthless, to the behavior of I'm going to commit suicide, or that I'm going to, you know, write a suicide note or something like that. So really destructive behaviors coming very quickly from our feelings and coming very quickly from our thoughts. And the role that mindfulness meditation can do is that when we are sitting there and we're focusing just on our breath, for everyone, what happens is thoughts come into our minds, and the entire practice of mindfulness meditation is being mindful of when these thoughts come into your mind that distract you from your breath, and returning your focus to your breath. And so what it does is it grows your ability to see these thoughts as they come into your mind, and it allows you a bit of space to be able to change that thought. And similarly, when you're in mindfulness meditation, you may feel a bit uncomfortable in your chair suddenly. And while it would be natural to very quickly just adjust your body, you can notice, oh, I feel a bit uncomfortable. And you can create that space of, you know, I'm not going to deal with that now, or I'm going to choose to move in a little bit later. So the feeling doesn't go immediately to the behavior. So what we're growing in mindfulness meditation is our ability to control the steps between the thought, the feeling, and the behavior. So in accordance with this theory, there's been a meta-analysis of 47 different studies that included more than 3,500 people who were on mindfulness meditation protocol. And it demonstrated that mindfulness meditation is, quote unquote, moderately effective in reducing symptoms of depression, anxiety, and pain. It's interesting that pain's included in there, because pain is actually very closely related to our thoughts. In fact, it's been shown on functional imaging of the brain that we experience physical pain in the same areas of the brain where we experience emotional pain. And so in people who have like chronic back pain and depression, which is actually a very common combination, similarly with fibromyalgia, you can experience a lot of pain. There can be kind of a double hit for somebody with like spinal stenosis or some sort of degenerative disc disease in the back, because they, one, have physical pain, but then they also have more emotional pain from their depression, so their pain will feel even worse. And in fact, like this study was showing, people that are doing mindfulness meditation are able to moderately bring down the feelings of pain as well as the feelings of depression. And there was one other study related to mindfulness meditation where they took
a group of people who had moderate stress scores, and they had received, some had received mindfulness meditation while others had received health education. And it was found that there's a greater reduction in the depressive symptoms in those who received the mindfulness meditation than those who received the health education. So as we've seen in this study and is important to look for in other studies, is controlled against a different sort of intervention that would maybe have some similar effects. So people will have, for example, a little bit of an antidepressant effect if they just are sensitive somebody's caring about them or if they're in some sort of group activity. But since this was compared against health education, hopefully it's a little more robust in showing us that mindfulness meditation can be important for decreasing symptoms of depression.
Hey listeners, some of you have so kindly asked how you can support the podcast. You can help by supporting us on Patreon, so please kindly find our Patreon link in the show notes. You can also support us by leaving a review, so please let me know what you think about the show by leaving a review on iTunes. You can find me on Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook as Dr. Nissen. And it's important to note that this podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice. No doctor-patient relationship is formed. And the use of this information and the materials linked to this podcast is content of this podcast and is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice from any medical condition they have, and they should seek the assistance of their healthcare professionals for any such conditions.